You're listening to The Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning
on KVON.
I'm going to spend some time here in this segment on what would be, for most radio stations, a very odd topic to talk about, but not here in Napa. We're going to talk about a pruning school and a new approach to the pruning of grapevines. And joining me now in studio, Dan Barron is here. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Barry.
And we also have Molly Hodgins with us in studio. Good morning, Molly.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. Full disclosure, Dan's a friend of mine for about 30 years.
It's true. Guilty as charged.
Just in case anything seems overly familiar, you'll know why. Molly, I've just met for the first time this morning.
Nice meeting you.
So, Dan, you let me know about this, and I probably would have been on my radar if you hadn't, but it's a very interesting thing, that what you told me in the prep for this segment about a different approach. Can you give us a snapshot of what you're talking about before we get into the details of this? What is it that's different? What are you after with this?
Well, before I get into that, I, in way, I suppose, of apology for this season, you know, vineyardists, this time of year when the leaves fall off the vines, you know, everyone else's thoughts turn to holidays and our thoughts turn to pruning. So in that spirit, it all goes back for me, and most of the people we talked to in the Valley. There was a conference in January of 2016, and I've been doing this since the early 70s. So I probably pruned my first vine in 1971, and so to go to a conference, everyone I talked to afterwards said, "Does your head hurt?" You know, you go to a conference, and you essentially are told that pretty much everything you're doing is wrong. And the way that I think about it, to give you some perspective for me, I kind of deeply went down this rabbit hole. I retired from Silver Oak in 2016 and brought this in my parting gift was to bring this company in to work with Silver Oak. So I work with them for three seasons. This would be the fourth. And I found out they were doing a university degree at the University of Bordeaux, and it looked like an opportunity for me to get back to Bordeaux and speak French. And so last year I completed that degree. And one of the people in Saint-Emilion I was pruning with said it very succinctly. He said, traditionally, what we've been doing for the last 3,000 or 4,000 years is pruning by shape and having a mental image, a rectangle, if you will, that we're going to say, we're going to force these climbing vines to stay in this rectangle. What Simonet and Cirque developed is a pruning by physiology. It's actually looking at the impact of these pruning wounds on the physiology and pathology of the grapevines. Coming up with a way to still prune commercially, so you still have vines that are manageable, that produce a crop, but that don't along the way create disease and trauma to these organisms we're trying to control.
Interesting, and we're going to get more into that as we talk here. Let's chat with Molly for a moment. Dan gave us a little bit of his background, many decades in the business in Silver Oak, among other places that you have done your thing. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am the viticulture instructor and the vineyard coordinator at Napa Valley College, which is my full-time position now. I moved to California in 2001 to attend Davis, where I got my master's degree in horticulture, focusing in viticulture. And from there, I've worked as a vineyard manager and viticulturist in Napa, Sonoma, and in Oregon. And in 2016, I took the full-time position at the college because I had decided that I wanted to teach rather than be out in the industry, mm-hmm. and I love it. But it still gives me an opportunity to, it gives me an opportunity to work with students, helping kind of shape careers and just really develop the a lot of the future of the viticulture industry here in Napa, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I started out in 2004 or 5 as an intern at Silver Oak, a viticulture intern, which is where I met Daniel. And he, so we've actually been in touch ever since then. And he got in contact with me at the college where he knew that I was about Simonet and Cirque, and I had heard of them and was interested. And the more I really learned about it, it just makes so much sense, their methods of pruning. And I've been using it or trying out the methods kind of on my own a little bit, and I really feel like they make a difference in the vine health overall. And the crop is fantastic. So
You've actually seen a difference in using these different techniques?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Just so, a little more vigor and strength and a little bit, well, these past couple of years have actually been large crop years, but we have certainly had some of our largest crops at the college.
You've mentioned both this organization, Simonet and Search. Can you tell us a little about who they are, Dan, and how they fit into this picture?
Yeah, so Marco Simonet and Pier Paolo Search were engaged, were hired by a very forward-thinking winery owner in Friuli, which is a region in Italy, in the northern end of Italy. And this is a winery named Schioppetto. And the owner of Schioppetto had noticed that his vines were dying, that they just weren't lasting as long as they used to. So this was about 35 years ago. And he, particularly Marco Simonet, gave him permission to go out with a chainsaw and just start cutting vines up. And Marco observed that there were certain types of pruning, certain pruning cuts that had less negative impact than others. And looking at hundreds, probably thousands of vines, he came up with a methodology that he started to apply. At part of my trips to Europe, I went to Italy and I went to Schioppetto and I saw the vines that had been pruned for 30 years in this method, and it was breathtaking. They are so even. There are no misses. There are no dead spur positions. All the spurs are at the same height. The shoots are all the same length. It's kind of crazy. And I've seen pictures of the same vineyard in production, and all the clusters are the same size and they're evenly distributed. It's everything vineyardists and winemakers dream of. And this is on the most difficult variety, Sauvignon Blanc. So Marco took his method, he distilled it down to four basic principles, and he traveled obviously around Italy, and then he went to South Africa and Australia and Chile and Argentina. He was giving a conference about 10 years ago, or speaking at a conference, and Denis de Bourdieu, the president of the University of Bordeaux and a very important winemaker in the Bordeaux region, said, "Why don't you come to Bordeaux?" At which point, Simonet and Cirque were engaged by Chateau Lafite, Chateau Lynch-Bage, Chateau Yquem, Chateau Ozone. They then moved to Burgundy, where La Lubise La Roy hired them to. So they're pruning.
People are not messing around.
Yeah, they're not messing around. They're pruning some of the iconic vineyards of the world. And this is rapidly becoming best practices for forward-thinking viticulturists worldwide.
Before we get further along, there is a school, a pruning school that's going to happen, and that's one of the reasons you're here, is to let people know this is coming up, and it's just a few weeks out, right?
Yeah, it's January 9th and 10th for the pruning phase. The other thing that we should say is that pruning and suckering is the green pruning, if you will, that happens in the spring, that they go hand in hand in this method. So every time you make a cut, you have an opening in the vine, and the older the wood you cut, the bigger the diameter, and the bigger the desiccation cone, the dry area underneath it. So if you cut in the spring, you virtually have no desiccation cone. So to the degree that you can do the shaping in the springtime, you really minimize the trauma to the vines.
So, as opposed to what we traditionally see here, which is dead of winter, right?
Dead of winter, and also one of the logics that we do in the geometric style of pruning is to try to minimize suckers because, in quote, it'll create more work. And in the seminate method, there's not as much attention to cutting flush, which cuts off the basal buds, because that sends a signal to the plant that this is a dead area and it stops sending sap. So it's all about sap flow. See, every viticulturist listening to this now, their head is starting to hurt like mine did in 2016. So long way of saying, 2 days of pruning in January, and then April 24th, the students will come back for a day of suckering.
And you only have, did you say 40 slots or so for this?
Well, I think it's 20 and 40. Right now it's 20, and there is a possibility, if there's interest, to expand it to 40. Mm-hmm. It depends on the number of instructors.
And folks who are listening right now, tell them where to go to get the information. We'll repeat this later as well.
The information for the pruning school is at pruningschool.eventbrite.com. So it's pruning school, all one word. Dot Eventbrite. So that's EventBrite.com.
Yeah. And I think if you Google Eventbrite pruning, it'll probably pop right up for you. So let's come back to this. Dan, you said something about the vines lasting longer, or the way the pruning is currently being done, vines are not lasting as long as they could. It's a common question you'll hear from people when they see a vineyard. How long has this been here? How long does it last? Those kind of questions. And you might be changing my perception of how long they're supposed to last based on the common knowledge. Talk about that a little.
Yeah, I think, and Molly, chime in here. I think ideally we'd like vineyards to last 40 years. And I think we're seeing now people replanting after 20, 25 years.
Right. The average, I think, is about 25 years. Certainly, if you get 30 years out of a vineyard, that's considered quite good. And I think it's skewing even a little bit shorter now.
And if you think that replanting a vineyard these days costs about $50,000 an acre, and then if you think that the average value of Napa Valley Cabernet is $7,800 a ton, not to mention the wine that you're not getting out of a mature vineyard, that
it
takes
putting into training it
3 years to get back into production. If you think about extending the life by 5 years, not to mention that those 5 years are 5 years of quality because you've created a more homogeneous vineyard. It's kind of a no-brainer in terms of the economics.
Mm-hmm. Most of us have never pruned a grapevine, that's for sure. Some of us may have pruned a rose bush, and you know the difference being if you do it right, you get a whole lot of beautiful blossoms and it looks full and complete, and if you do it wrong, you get a few less, but it doesn't affect your economics much. And it doesn't, you know, impact anybody's job, you know, going down the road. This seems a little bit revolutionary in a way, the potential for it to create change.
I agree. And I also think the other aspect that's revolutionary for me is the way that they teach. Because imagine you're a company, you have an idea, and you've done this in Argentina, you've done it in Chile, you've done it in Bordeaux and Burgundy. And as someone who's lived in Bordeaux, I can tell you, you go from region to region. One of the things we did in this class, this diploma, was that we pruned in four different vineyards in what I would say the four corners of Bordeaux. So the Médoc, the Libournais, Saint-Emilion, the Sauternes, at Yquem, And that's why I signed up for the program, by the way, to get to prune at Ekem, and in the Grof. And there are very proud traditions in each of these. I mean, if you talk to the people in the Médoc, they think the people in Saint-Emilion are complete savages. Who would prune a vine like that? And so what I was very impressed with is that the Seminet and Cirque team came in to each region. They didn't come in and say, you're pruning wrong. They said, oh, I know, this is how you prune in the Médoc. This is brilliant. Let us show you how to refine it so that you're not seeing these dead vines and these dead positions. And so they preserve and respect the native traditions. Here in California, all their teaching in the vineyards is in Spanish. And they come in and they spend 8 hours a day pruning side by side with the team. They analyze each vineyard, and they customize their approach to each vineyard and interview the vineyard manager, the winemaker, the owner, and then work with the rank and file. To me, that's as revolutionary as the pruning, because it gives respect and value to this very basic task that's kind of the foundation of everything we do. And I think what students will find when they attend this class is the class will be conducted exactly the same way. It will be first classroom and theory, then watch us do it, then we watch you do it, then you work as teams, we critique what you're doing. And that's a paradigm for how they communicate information. As we get more and more demanding and more specific in an aspect that we call precision farming, we ask much more of our vineyard teams than we used to. But we're not very good at communicating what we want. A typical vineyard foreman will walk into a vineyard, say, let me show you three vines. Got it? Of course, the crew says, sure, we got it, boss. And you come back the next day and say, what's wrong with you guys? Why are you not doing it the way we agreed? Their patience and the detail and the meticulousness in how they communicate is as important as the techniques.
Yeah, hard to imagine a scenario that's any more inclined toward translation errors, I guess you could say. You know, we all go through that. You're being taught something by someone who was taught by someone else, but how have they changed what they learned, you know, before they taught it to you? How close to the source, I guess, are you?
Right.
And you're saying this, these individuals developed this technique and they're teaching it directly?
Yes. And the other thing to remember, Barry, as I said earlier, these are long-seated traditions.
Yeah.
So unless you stay with someone and, you know, watch their tendency to backslide to do the way they're used to, and, you know, these are living plants, so everyone presents a slightly different puzzle. Okay, how do we apply these principles to this vine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it. Now, what about this next one? And so there's a tendency to say, oh, yeah, I understand. I'll go on and prune my own row.
I would emphasize that pruning is never a one-size-fits-all sort of process. It has to be tailored to the vine that you're pruning. And this pruning theory is very flexible to kind of like, this is the ideal, but this is what you, if you don't have the ideal, this is how we would adjust it here or in this situation, how we adjust it for cane pruning versus spur pruning. And so it can really work in all kinds of situations.
Mm. We're talking here with Dan Barron and Molly Hodgins, and the subject is the pruning school with Simonet and Cirque. Did I get it right that time? It's going to happen in January at Napa Valley College, and again, Eventbrite is a place where you can find the registration. This is an $800 course that goes on for 2 days in January, then, as you say, a follow-up in the spring. We're talking in this segment with some guests who are filling us in on a pruning school. This is not for just your average backyard gardeners, but for viticulturalists. And it's talking about a new way of pruning the grapevine to make it last longer, be a healthier plant, and as a result, produce a better quality, would you say, Dan, or a better quantity, or both, of grapes?
Better quality. Quantity, yes, in a sense. But, you know, in talking with some vineyard owners or vineyard managers, there's a little bit of confusion. They say, well, why would I want higher yields? It's actually more consistent yields. Yeah. So if you look at many vineyards, if it's cordon pruned, which means there are the spur positions along the wire, you'll see that it's missing spur positions or there are weak spur positions. And in talking to some of the people who have done this technique the longest, Doug Fletcher at Chimney Rock, one of the things that Doug commented on was that the evenness of the push at bud break and the evenness of the shoot diameter was really noticeable after a few years. And that will give you higher yields, but at consistent quality. In the world of winemaking, heterogeneity is synonymous with lower quality. You want everything to ripen at the same time. And so this will help accomplish that.
I can also add, it's about kind of evenness of growth, but also consistent yields from one year to the next. And frequently vineyards will get into sort of a cycle where one year the yields are high, the next year they're much lower, and then back up again. Of course, vintage to vintage variation is huge, but aside from that, they can kind of get into this boom or bust cycle, and this method of pruning would really keep things consistent from one year to the next.
Did you say you're using this technique at your vineyard at the Napa Valley College?
Yeah, we do. Well, I teach kind of both forms of pruning, the more geometric oriented and this. So we are doing a few rows just for really 2 years.
Have you seen a difference?
I believe so. Yeah, the part of the vineyard that we tried this on had been quite weak, and along with some irrigation changes, I really saw much higher fruit yields this year, even versus 2018, which is unusual. I mean, both years were heavy crop years in Napa, but to have a much larger yield in 2019 was certainly unusual, and just more evenness of growth. Kind of following what Daniel was speaking to, this section that I'm speaking of is cane pruned. It isn't spur pruned, but the mid cane position. So if you've ever pruned a cane, instead of leaving the two lowest buds on a shoot, you basically just leave one long cane with 8 or 10 buds. And so these more evenness of the mid-cane bud positions, which is a known issue with cane pruning.
And Dan, you mentioned working with this, consulting with Silver Oak since your retirement. Have you seen a difference in the vineyards you've focused on there?
Yeah, in particular, I was thinking we have Silver Oak also is involved with the brand Tumi, which is making Pinot Noir, and had acquired a vineyard in Forestville for Pinot Noir, and we converted that from cordon prune to cane prune. I'm just thinking of a way to describe the difference between cordon and cane for those non-viticulturists listening. In cane pruning, you cut off the fruiting wood every year and renew it with a cane from last year, whereas in cordon, the wood is left on the wire and you just work with two-bud spurs, generally, one or two-bud spurs. In any case, we converted a cordon vineyard to cane, and the shape and consistency of the vines following this technique was wonderful. It was just one block, and you would come along, and was so different than the other blocks. Very rational, very easy to follow. And it's also, it changes the mentality of the pruner to, okay, you told me to leave a 2-butt spur and a 6-butt cane. Okay, I'm going to go over here. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, next one, next one, next one. So it's just that geometric pruning. Instead, with the Semonet method, you're saying, okay, what's the bud of the future? Where do I want to take this vine? I'm going to find that perfect bud, and then I'm going to, now I'm going to leave a cane for production. So it's a subtle but very different mentality. The other thing that, and again, this came out in the course in France where I was being taught by the top plant physiologist in Bordeaux, rapid-fire French with jet lag, with my Google Translate under the table. No one noticed, of course, among the other students. And she started talking about Codit. And what's interesting to me is this is kind of the Newt Rockne, you know, the famous This Is a Football story. Plants are not animals. We tend to anthropomorphize everything. Mm-hmm. If we cut a divot out of our arm, our tissue will regenerate. Plants don't do that. They compartmentalize. And the word codit was, or the anagram codit was created by a plant pathologist in 1977 with the U.S. Department of Agriculture Forestry Division. It means compartmentalization of decay in trees. Okay? Plants form desiccation cones under pruning wounds. When those desiccation cones intersect, because you've pruned on both sides of a trunk or a spur position, you start to strangle sap flow. And when Marco Semonet cut open these vines, he saw all this dead tissue, very little white tissue, but a lot of brown and rotten tissue in these vines, in these trunks, and in these arms. And if you think about, first of all, the reserves are very important, and they come from this white tissue. But it also enables the vine to be resilient in a heat spike. If we're trying to minimize irrigation, we tend to lose that resiliency when we have a small percentage of living tissue in the permanent parts of the vine. So that's one of the keys to what they do. What this method is creating more living tissue in the vines.
Yeah, and if I could just jump in, you can even anthropomorphize a little bit and kind of, if you're thinking about cuts on the permanent part of the vine, of the cordons, which are the horizontal extensions of the trunk, or the trunk itself, and when we're talking about cane pruning, every cut is going to leave scar tissue. And for vines, the vasculature is very much on the outside of the trunk. The xylem and the phloem are in the outermost layers of the trunk, are the most active parts of the xylem. And when you have those little scars, it affects sap flow. So that's the vasculature, the xylem and the phloem. And all these little damages will divert sap flow around that. And to the extent that we can maintain the proper channels to the fruiting units, which are the shoots, that really is where the heart of the improvements are with this pruning method. Hmm. Kind of just maintaining the integrity of the xylem and the phloem. Mm-hmm.
And if you do this right from the planting of the vineyard, you can imagine having a direct flow of sap from the root tips to the tips of the shoots with no interruption from scar tissue or dead wood. And that's pretty impressive. But even doing it on a vineyard that's 20 years old, you can increase the amount of living tissue in the areas that are now being pruned in this physiological manner, and that's what revives these vines, as Molly was saying, with vineyards that she'd pruned.
not to overly anthropomorphize, but I picked up a little bit of a hardening of the arteries feeling, right?
There you go.
Right? Is it a little bit like that? I mean, they talk about lesions in your in a human, and then that leads to blockages and scar tissue in your vascular system. Is it a similar?
Well, it's just if you kind of pinched off a vein or an artery and had to divert everything around that, like a detour. Mm-hmm. It's kind of more, I guess, like a roadway, kind of all these detours instead of a direct route. And just thinking about, you know, water kind of flowing in pipes, essentially. That's really what xylem is, these little pipes. And instead of having a direct route, they have to take all these turns and swerves and go out of their way to get where they're going. I also want to mention it's important. Any viticulturist listening would be like, what about trunk disease? Because that's one of the biggest issues we face with why vineyards are replanted, you know, at 20 years. We have many fungal pathogens that can actually get into pruning wounds. So certainly this pruning method is not, you know, 100% going to prevent that, but it does give the vine a little more time and space to heal its own pruning wounds to prevent the pathogens from getting into the permanent parts of the vine. And so it does go to reducing that. Certainly we have to take our, most vineyards are using some kind of protection measures against these pathogens, but this will help.
You mentioned ability for the vine to cope with a heat spike. For example, does any of this translate to what I'm sure a lot of viticulturists are thinking about, and that's climate change and the conditions that vines are going to be in the future? And it's not like an annual crop that you can plow under and plant something else next year. You're looking at a 20, 30, 40-year commitment to a vineyard, right? So how does this factor into that consideration?
I would say it's the resilience and giving the vine the best means of sap flow from the roots to the shoots will improve the performance in a heat spike. And really with climate change is a big unknown. I mean, we're seeing more extremes, certainly lots of really high heat spikes. Just kind of thinking about having the pipes in place to deal with that, because water is key for reducing any kind of heat damage.
All right. Let's recap the basic info on how people can find out more about this and sign up for it. It's a pruning school. It's happening in January. Molly, you want to take us through the basics of getting registered?
Well, you would go to pruningschool.eventbrite.com just register there. If anybody has questions about it, my email address is on there, and I can give it out.
Go ahead.
It's molly.hodgins, H-O-D-G-I-N-S, at napavalley.edu. Mm-hmm.
And it's January 9th and 10th, all day long, those 2 days, and then a return on April 24th. And this is for people in the industry, obviously. This is not, you know, amateur, backyard, got a couple of vines.
Yeah, it assumes a basic knowledge of pruning.
Right. Yeah, very good.
We should also say that we're asking students to hold January 11th open in case there's really severe rain. Mm. But people should be prepared to prune in the rain with rain gear and boots.
One question that's come to mind, an industry with such a very long tradition and practice, active practice for hundreds of years of modern techniques, I would guess, and then maybe thousands of years of previous techniques. How can it be that a couple of people discovered something so new and different all of a sudden?
Well, it's not a couple people. In fact, this was a technique that was developed in the 1890s by a man named Poussard that was not followed. He was doing it in the Charente. He also claimed that it would cure phylloxera, which it didn't. And so I think his work was discredited because of that. But the pruning work, there's a pamphlet that you can find online from the 1920s, where this was re-proposed. There's other people around the world, like any great invention, other people have come up with very similar approaches. I think that Simonet and Sirk is unique in their teaching method and with their experience around the world and with their distillation to four basic principles. Marco has written two books. The first book on cane pruning was the OIV, the Office International du Vin, Viticulture Book of the Year in 2017 or 2018. I think that these ideas have been around. I think that Marco has really refined them and distilled them and come up with a great way to communicate them to pruners.
Yeah, and this isn't a reinvention of the wheel. I mean, the basic tenets of pruning are consistent. It's just small changes that you can make to really improve vine health and consistency in pruning.
Yeah, very good. It's really in the weeds. No vineyard joke intended necessarily, but deep dive into something we don't normally get to explore, and it's kind of fascinating to me because those of us who are not out there live among these vineyards, and we look and we're curious and we wonder what's going on and how does that work, and finding out small things that make such a big difference is really interesting to me. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Barry.
Dan Barron and Molly Hodgins here talking about this pruning school.
Keep it right here. More from the Barry Pod coming up
on KVON.